A new report released this week showed the annual number of children who die before they reach age 5 is shrinking. The findings, published by UNICEF and the World Health Organization, found that death rates fell to 7.6 million in 2010, from more than 12 million in 1990. But both groups stress that improvements in child mortality rates will not be enough to meet the United Nations goal set in 2000 of reducing child mortality by two-thirds by 2015. We spoke to the head of maternal, newborn, and child health at UNICEF, Renee van de Vert, who explained why there has been a decrease.
This is Renee. I think a few reasons that have contributed to indeed this really encouraging news. I think first of all, at the research and scientific level, we know really well what kills children under 5. We also have good evidence on what interventions work. And I think what has changed over the last years is that people have really galvanized around a few interventions and taken them to scale. A few examples that come to mind is, for example, around immunization, the fight against malaria, and I hope you've seen the malaria report that we launched the day before yesterday, really encouraging number in the fight against malaria. So both on the preventive side, preventing some of these key killers of children, but also increasingly on the treatment side. In Niger, for example, under 5 mortality has declined actually significantly. And one of the strategies that the Niger government, together with UNICEF, WHO, and other partners, has adopted is to train what we call a community health worker. And that lesser trained person, we give him or her training in really simple interventions, such as providing vitamin A, such as giving bed nets to children, but also treating children with diarrhea, with ORS, the oral rehydration salts, and zinc. And we really believe that bringing services and effective interventions closer to populations, especially those that live in rural and deprived areas, that has been contributing to these great numbers.
Did you find areas, for example, sub-Saharan Africa, that there were still quite high rates?
Yes, I think in general we can say that sub-Saharan Africa still carries a heavy burden. And what we see generally is countries affected by emergencies, by fragility in general, where health systems and health workers really can't deliver the services they need. So I'll leave Tessa give a few number examples. So for us, it's clear that fragile states around the world, but in particular around in sub-Saharan Africa, is where we will need to get even more attention to making sure that children and women there as well receive these effective, proven interventions.
Yeah, I might just add that we see an increasing concentration of these deaths taking place in sub-Saharan Africa, where nearly half of all under 5 deaths in the world take place today, as well as in southern Asia, where about a third of them are taking place. So just in these two regions alone, we find about 82% of deaths are concentrated. And in fact, only 5 countries comprise about half of all under 5 deaths, and those are India, Nigeria, the Democratic Republic of the Congo, Pakistan, and China. And India and Nigeria together account for about a third of all under 5 deaths. So a lot of concentration in where these deaths are taking place.
Tessa, coming back to that, just another question just to bring in with regard to countries and coming back to the idea of where statistically wise, look, coming back to countries who are afflicted by conflict, where people just don't have the access, where people are displaced, where there's so much going on that aid agencies can't get through and can't get to do their work. Again, this must have an effect on how people are being treated in immunization programs, things like that.
Exactly, and one of the strategies that we take forward, in a normal setting, you would ask mothers to come to a vaccination center, for example, and have their children be seen regularly by a health worker. Because of access insecurity and also health workers that are just not there, what we do adopt in many of these countries, like Somalia, for example, is what we call child health days or child health weeks, during which it's normally organized once or twice a year, and there we take health workers actually out into these remote communities and make sure that children get at least 4 or 5 simple things that can be administered, if you want, on that outreach basis. So that includes vitamin A again, deworming, the provision of a bed net, and essential immunizations. Similarly, because the systems are so weak, again, we try to really build on that community network to have better education through peer educators at that very, very remote level. The other thing that is really critically important in these fragile states and emergencies is, again, as we said in the beginning, to have partners work together so that we have 5, 6 key interventions that we focus on and that we make sure all partners work together to deliver those interventions to those children and women.
We were saying that obviously it's very welcome news for yourselves and for the WHO, and certainly, but with regard to what more needs to be done with regard to reaching goals, I mean, we look at the Millennium Development Goals and we look at 2015 and we look ahead to that and we ask the question, where are we going towards that? What goals do we really need to be reaching by then?
I think indeed, even on MDG4, I think there is huge progress, but the rate of progress is not sufficient to get there. So we really need, until 2015, if we want to reach these goals, we really need to accelerate efforts. A few things are needed. I think, as we said from the beginning, we probably have all the tools currently available. It's just taking programs to scale and reaching those children that live in those very, very, very hard-to-reach parts of the world. For example, the immunization programs, again, they really now focus on what they might call the fifth child, which is, we always looked at 80% coverage, but now it's really going to that last child that is often left behind, not just for immunization again, but also make sure that they get the ORS, the zinc, and the treatment interventions that they need. I think there will always be a need for an increase of funding, because these interventions, to take them to scale, will just require additional, not just funding, but also political consensus. And when we talk about funding here, it's not just donor funding, but it's also having the leaders of these countries acknowledge that more needs to be done and can be done by themselves and partners on the ground, allocate more resources to MDGs in general, and then have a strong partnership that can chip in both technical but also financial resources.
Yes, so the question I was going to come to with regard to helping disadvantaged communities, obviously investment would be key in towards that. But is there anything else you can pinpoint that would also help?
I think what is great on the numbers side, and Tessa and her team have brought out great documents on equity. I think first and foremost, even highlighting the needs of these children and identifying where they are. We have issued great documents that identify that it's often rural children. And I think giving a face to that and having media such as yourself keeping this on the attention of people. And once we know where these children are and what their weaknesses are, again, work together with all partners on the ground, especially local communities and local leaders, to see what we can do together to really make sure that by 2015 we've made these goals.
I can just add
something
here. I just from the data side, estimating child mortality levels depends in large part on the implementation of household surveys on the ground, because many of these countries with high mortality levels do not have functioning vital registration systems. So we also need support and additional funding to build capacity at country level to collect these data and to interpret the results.
Yes, that's interesting you should say that, because talking about statistically, obviously people in rural communities, people you might know that there are so many children in a particular community that there are no statistics there to tell you how many children are living in a village.
Exactly. And this is certainly an area that needs greater attention, needs greater funding, and needs more focus. UNICEF is already extensively involved at country level in supporting countries to implement the multiple indicator cluster surveys, which is a household survey program that covers a range of different indicators, including child mortality. But certainly a lot more needs to be done at local level in terms of strengthening routine information systems.
Yeah, perhaps, sorry, this is Renee again, and indeed, data is so, so powerful, even for someone who sits at the district and needs to manage all these different programs, having data available, quality data, where do people live, what are the gaps, is really extremely powerful and very needed.
Well, I might just add that the statistics point to the fact that the large majority of deaths do occur early on in life. About 70% of these under 5 deaths occur among children under 1 year of age, and about 40% occur in the first month of life. And in fact, many of these very, very shortly after birth. So that also has implications in terms of the interventions that are needed to bring these death rates down even further.
Yes, and it also highlights the need for integration. So to save these little young newborns, we also need to work on maternal services. So I think for us, strategically, it's going to be very important to bring different programs together so that, for example, an HIV program, that also builds on maternal health and newborn health so that we achieve together these goals.